This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
When we begin, we're all looking for the promised land. And in the end, we just need someone to hold our hands. Everybody needs some kind of refuge, something to run to, someone who loves you.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Everybody is Addicted. Today, we graciously have Fred here, and he's willing to tell us his story of what he's been through. So I'm going to give it away to Fred before I tell too much of his story. So take it away, Fred.
I appreciate it, Jasmine. Thanks for having me on. My name is Fred Mandrakia. My name is Fred Mandrakia. I was born in Boston, Massachusetts. Raised not too far from there. I was born on a deathbed. I was born with something called hereditary splenectosis. I was always picked on, bullied, you know, because I was sickly as a little kid. My parents split when I was probably about 10, you know, and once my father left, you know, I seen a lot of, you know, drug addicts, alcoholics, criminals of various sorts coming in and out of my mother's home. I seen people making fast money. You know, as I got older, I wound up moving with my dad, but, you know, by then the damage was done. I'd seen way too much. So, you know, one of the things that stuck with me was everybody was making money off drugs all the time. So When I got to high school, naturally, you know, I thought I was a little entrepreneur and I capitalized on that, started selling pot. Obviously, you know, you're in the barbershop long enough, you're going to get a haircut. I started smoking the pot I was selling. Then, you know, things progressed slowly but surely they progressed. I started tripping on acid. 17 years old, I snorted my first line of coke. And I remember, you know, I come from the DARE era, the say no to drugs era, where, yeah, you know, drugs were horrible.
I came right before DARE. So they didn't have DARE. DARE came in right after I got out of school.
Yeah. So, you know, drugs were bad. Okay. That whole deal. And I remember, you know, as I was going to sniff my first line of coke, the guy put it on a mirror and I'm looking in the mirror with the straw in my nose. And I just knew.
Looking in a mirror at yourself too, right?
Yeah, I knew it was all bad. Later on, you know, my crimes progressed. I eventually went to state prison. I got out of state prison in 2008 and decided, okay, I got to fill my time. You know, if I want to stay out of that life, get a job, fill my time with something. So I started training in mixed martial arts, became a fighter. While training for one of my fights in 2010, I pinched a nerve in my lower back. We were training takedowns. The guy I was training with was approximately, I'm 5'5", and was probably walking at 155, fighting at 135. The guy I was training with was 6'3", 325. And in his brain, we were training takedown defense that day. So he tried stopping the takedown several times. Finally, out of anger, I picked him up and dumped him on his head. And because it was done out of anger, I didn't lift with my legs as I should have. And I pinched a nerve in my lower back. The next day, I was stepping out of the shower. And all of a sudden, I couldn't feel the lower half of my body. And I collapsed to the floor.
Oh, that'd be scared too.
Yeah, at the emergency room, they gave me 60 Percocets with no Tylenol.
That is so much Percs all at once without even thinking about it. Like, I've had friends where they've overdosed them in the hospital because the hospital doesn't really think about it. It's like when I have panic attacks, they just give me handfuls of lorazepam. It's like,
yeah,
I've had problems with lorazepam. Don't give me lorazepam.
Yeah. They don't think about these things, clearly, but what I would later find out is they were overprescribing everybody because, you know, Purdue Pharma and multiple other pharmaceutical companies were.
And you're in the States too. You're in the US. I'm in Canada. In Canada, they're a lot more strict about their laws of and rules about giving out opiates in the States. It's like here, it's like benzos for everybody. And for you guys, it's like opiates for everybody.
Yeah, that's literally their answer for everything. You know, if you stub your toe, and you went to the emergency room anytime between 1995 and 2012, the answer was Percocet, you know, and that's not the answer. You know, there are so many different routes you could go, you know, to relieve pain, you know, non-narcotic medications and whatnot. But anyway, they gave me 60 Percs with no Tylenol, oxycodone, and, you know, from there, I went to my primary care physician. Unbeknownst to me, he also was part of all that stuff that was going on. He was being paid, and he was overprescribing. He was selling scripts. He was doing all kinds of fun stuff. Eventually, he was arrested by the Drug Enforcement Administration and indicted. This left
really
me without
not
a
your
doctor.
Fault, then, eh? Not your fault.
No, you know, but you know, I had no idea. You know, and I'd be lying if I was to sit here and say I didn't love how that stuff made me feel.
I will say the same thing. It's not like I was like, I don't like this and it's making my stomach upset and I don't want to take this anymore.
Everything's great.
Yeah, everything's beautiful. Life's great.
Yeah. The house is burning down, the dog's in there. That's okay, man. We'll get a new one tomorrow. It's cool, you know. But so they wound up indicting my doctor. This left me without a prescribing physician.
Oh, no.
So the new doctor that they sent me to, he did the MRIs and everything. And he said, listen, kid, you need back surgery. And so what we're going to do is I'm going to write you a script to get you through until the consultation. At the consultation, if you show up, you know, I'll give you some more pills to get you through until the actual surgery date. However, if you do not follow through with this, I will not prescribe you so much as a Tylenol ever again. So, you know, I thought he was blowing smoke up my ass, you know, like, yeah, okay, doctor, sure. You know, yeah. And I went and cashed the script and, you know, got jammed. And that's what we call it here in North America or Boston.
The funny part about in Canada is they'll give you a massive script once and then they cut you off. And so you go through withdrawals. They never continue the script. They only give you one prescription for opiates. And they'll give you a huge one, like one for like 120 pills, right? And then after those pills are gone, you ain't getting anything else. So then you're basically, and they don't teach you how to taper down. They don't teach you the things that can happen to you and like how sick you're going to get. They don't like inform you that because they just take it away. And that's why the States is so different, because I keep going, oh my God, they just keep giving it to you. They don't do that here. They're like, nope, suffer.
Yeah, well, that's what they do at the emergency room here. But, you know, like I said, they gave me the 60 at the emergency room. And then I went to my primary and, you know, you did that. And then I got the new primary and the new primary told me that. I thought he was blowing smoke up my ass. So I ran through the script. I think it was like a 2-week script. I must have ran through it in like 4 days, 5 days or something like that. Because by then, you know, I'm taking a lot.
Because you have to, or your body needs more and more and more to get the effect you want to have, right?
Yeah, and you don't even think about that. You're just like, you know, just whatever. Yeah.
Just five.
Yeah, it's whatever. The bottle, the bottle says take two as needed for pain, so I take five. You know, natural addict mentality. You know, because five makes me feel good. It's not just about the pain for me no more. So I went back to that doctor, and that doctor laughed in my face, and he said, I don't, you know, I know who you were seeing before. I'm not that guy. I'm very serious about my practice. This isn't happening. So there's the door. And I thought he was joking. So I'm looking around for the camera and Ashton Kutcher waiting any second to come through and tell me I'm punked, you know, but that didn't happen. Yeah.
Because realistically, just taking that after taking so much, just taking it away from you, like not even sending you to a methadone clinic or something to try to help you get off of it. Just there's the door. Like, go suffer, figure it out, buy drugs in the street. I don't give a fuck. Like, wow.
More or
less. Like, that's also being as bad as the doctor that was prescribing in the first place. Like.
Yeah, exactly. If not worse, because,
doctor, so,
you know, their oath is to do no harm. And by just showing somebody the door, that's exactly what you're doing. You're throwing that guy to the street, you know, but they don't give a shit because they're not hooked on anything. They're going home at night to a nice steak and a warm bed and they feel great and they get up in the morning and that's it, you know. But so naturally now I'm physically dependent and I'm in pain. So what do? You know, you stop buying the pills on the street. And I don't know what it is in Canada, but in North America, in Boston, it was $1 a milligram.
Yeah, it's $1 a milligram here. Yeah. If you get it delivered, if you get it delivered, they add 50 cents, but dollar milligram delivery.
That's kind of them. Yeah, that's crazy. So $1 a milligram, you know, and by now I'm taking 90 milligrams a day. So at minimum, just to get by, just to not be in pain, we're talking almost $100 a day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now you want to feel good though. So now you're talking $120 a day, you know, and I'm sorry, but when you're fighting in the cage and you're just working a job, you're not going to be able to sustain that and your bills and everything else, you know?
Loans because you want those pills.
Right. Yeah. You know what I mean? So you start taking out payday loans and all kinds of madness, you know, do anything you can, literally. So eventually the $5 bag of heroin became the choice, you know.
We have fentanyl here and we've had fentanyl a lot longer than you guys. So
right.
I went to fentanyl instead because it's stronger, right? I was like, oh, fuck that.
So yeah. So
cheaper.
So in 2012, I started using heroin. I started snorting heroin. And you know how that works. You know how the progression is. Not long thereafter, I had several deaths that were really close to me. My older brother passed, my cousin passed, and my longtime roommate passed. And these people were the three closest people to me in the world. That combined with the fact that now I'd been snorting heroin for a while and it's not hitting me the same anymore. I started injecting it. That quickly led to in and out on the county jail ticket. And then
as it does.
Yeah. And then in 2016, I went on a bank robbery spree.
Oh, really? See. My ex, who's still in use heavily, he just steals things like from people's backyards and tries to hide them in my backyard.
Yeah. So what happened was, you know, I ran out of money. It was December in New England, which is just as cold as it is in Canada. You know, maybe a little bit less, but not so much. You know, I was facing homelessness. I was addicted. I had my now former significant other with me at the time, who was also addicted. So I had two habits to take care of now. And my back was to the wall. And so, you know, sticking up the 7-Eleven or the gas station or Flacco just wasn't an option, you know, because what are you going to get away with? A couple hundred bucks. So
I know people who've done it and they get caught so fast too.
So, you know, I'd heard people just writing a note and passing it at the bank and walking out with thousands of dollars. So, you know, seeing as that's more or less what people do in that situation, one of the things that people do in Boston when they're addicted and their back is to the wall is they walk into the bank and they slide a note and, you know, everything's A-okay after that. You know, the first one, unfortunately, went better than planned because it wasn't planned, you know.
Makes you like confident.
Exactly. Everything was done on the fly. I was terrified my first time. I was shaking so bad I had to write two notes, you know. I slid the note. I got the money and it was on from there. This led to me robbing 9 more of them in and around Boston and subsequently being captured by the Federal Bureau of Investigation's Bank Robbery Task Force in 2017, the first week of 17. It was January 6th. I was in a hotel about to get into a shower and next thing I know, I got guns in my face.
I got attacked.
So I was arrested by the Bank Robbery Task Force January 6th, 2017. And
this podcast is sponsored by IQBar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQBar plant protein bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter. Hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
I ended up receiving 100 months in federal prison, which translates to 8.4 years. While I was there, I was sent to the United States Penitentiary, which is the highest level of custody. It's the most brutal world I've ever seen. I thought I was
I couldn't even imagine that you survived that. That is surviving being in that scenario for that long.
Yeah, coming out of the United States Penitentiary without any new stab wounds is something, you know. As soon as you get there, they want to see all of your paperwork and make sure that you didn't cooperate with the government in any way. That you don't have any sex offenses, things like that. And if you do, then you're not even going to know it. Everyone's going to know it, but you're just going to end up with a bunch of holes in you all of a sudden.
We're like that here too. If you have any sex offenses or any children offenses, you're done. And they also test you. Like if you're a newbie to prison, they like to test you and they all try to take go at you. You know what I mean? That's a big one. My ex that goes to prison often, so he's told me many stories, right? He said his first time, they beat the living hell out of him just to prove he was a newbie, right? Yep. And then he said he turned around and did the same thing when he was older, so.
So while I was there, I saw several friends get murdered. These have all been solved, so, you know, whatever. They, you know, their senseless killings over nothing, you know. Life is very cheap in there. You know, I watched one guy get killed over literally $5 worth of mailing stamps, you know.
Just like the welcome to the jungle, you know what I mean?
So I saw that. I saw a bunch of people overdosing because drugs are a lot more rarely available and cheaper inside a prison than outside of prison somehow.
I didn't know they were cheaper. That's surprising.
Oh yeah. For me, they were because of the people that I was connected with at the time. Mm-hmm. And once I saw everything that I saw people dying. I saw, you know, people dropping from the drugs. I decided this is it. You know, I saw enough. I felt enough. I went through enough. I've lost enough, you know.
That's how you have to get to it. You've had to have enough. Once you've had enough, that's when you can get better.
Yeah. I was sick of being sick. I was sick and tired of being sick and tired, as they say in AA. So I decided to turn everything around. And while doing so, I realized I don't want the last 30 years of my life to have counted for nothing. I also don't want people to have to travel down the road I traveled down. So what I did is I sat down and I started writing about what led me to federal prison. I ended up creating a book. It's titled The Polar Bear Bandit, Raw and Uncut. And it's available now on Amazon. Shameless plug. But
I will provide all the information for this book as well in the show notes, so you know, because it does. I've read some of it. Really, really good.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I didn't do it for immense wealth of notoriety, as I disclosed in the beginning of the book, because, you know, I'm an indie author and you don't make a lot of money that way. But it's not about the money for me. I want people to not have to experience the pain that I experienced. I've got that going right now. You know, I'm now out here I got clean 6 months after I went in. So I've got 7.5 years clean now.
Good for you. That's some time.
And I mean, for the people that have been in prison or jail, you know that, you know, all you want to do is escape all day, mentally and or physically. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So what do you get high? You get drunk. You know what I mean? So for you to stay sober in that environment, that's really, really hard to do.
Yeah, that is really, really, really hard to do. I even know, with my ex, there's been times where he's paid people to beat him up so that he could stay in the nurse's unit and get
infirmary.
They had to break his ribs. He paid them to break his ribs so that he could get opiates because he's that addicted to them. So
That's dedication.
That's what I mean. he put some effort into, he's institutionalized. He doesn't know how to live on the outside. He's been in prison at such a young age, so many times, for 5 year stretches at a time, for kidnapping, for stealing, mostly stealing. And he blames the government and even has a whole newspaper write about it. And like I said, tried to get himself beat up, or has himself beat up twice, so that he could get medication in jail because he knew he was only going to be there for so long. So you being strong enough to stay sober in an environment where I know is just ludicrously dangerous and easily accessible, and it's almost like people judge you for not doing it and all of that goes on.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. But you know, I stayed sober. I wrote that first book, and then I wrote two more subsequently. And now, since I've been home about a year, with a little break in between. I had to go in for a little quick stint because I was in a halfway house and somebody did something, and I wound up having to go in for a short period of time. But more or less, I've been out for about a year. And, you know, I've been sober, and, you know, it's amazing. It really is amazing, the things that are happening. I've heard all the stories. I don't do the meetings because it doesn't work for me.
I don't do the meetings either because they don't work for me, but everybody has their own way of getting better. And whatever works for you, not one size fits all. No way.
Yep. But at the meetings I did attend, I did hear, you know, how amazing it is, how everything changed, you know, and I didn't believe any of that. And it does. It really does. You know, but you have to be ready, you know. And
you need to work at it too. Can't just say you're going to do it and think that's all that you need to do, because it's not.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, so, you know, I've published my first out of three books. I was cast a few days ago in a movie about the pressed pills that are coming into the country. It's called Pressed. We stopped filming in 3 days.
That's exciting. I like those kind of shows.
Yeah. And, you know, don't get it twisted, though. You know, I still have my trials and my struggles. For instance, the home that my fiance and I reside in was condemned last week because my landlord had it inspected to add an addition, and they discovered a bunch of wiring that was wrong. So I'm in a hotel right now. I'm coming to you from a hotel, you know, which normally would make some people use, well, most. My experiencing all of these successes, however small they may be, so quickly, also something that would make somebody say, you know what, fuck it, I could party today. You know what I mean? It's cool.
And at the motels, there's a lot of motels here. That's where all the drug deals go down, is at the motels.
Oh, absolutely. And so you've had so
many tests in life, your tests in prison, your tests like coming out of prison and living a new life, your tests of having your routine changed and having drugs accessible and still coming out strong and happy and positive. I commend you on that. That is real strength, and that's real dedication to what you want your life to be.
You know, and I just want everybody out there that is going through it still to know that, you know, listen, if I did it, you can do it. You know, I'm a human. If you watch my fights on YouTube, you'll see I lost fights just like I won them. I'm a human. And if I can do it, you can do it. You know what I mean? I want everybody to succeed, you know? So just know that if you're going through it right now, it's not the end of the line. And if you're sober and you're going through some stuff, you'll get through it. There's no reason to use. There's no reason to go pick up that needle or that drink or whatever it is that you do. There's no reason. Nothing is worth that. Nothing is worth throwing your life away over, because today's day and age, it's dangerous. It's not safe out there.
Well, thank you for that. I will leave it at that because that was great. And I have been struggling mentally, so I really appreciate what you just said. And you will find his information about his book in the show notes as well. If you are interested, you'll be able to find the link and be able to find it very easily. I'll put it on every single platform that this will be released on. And again, thank you so much, Fred. I appreciate everything you said. I think it's going to really make people stop and think, especially people that have never experienced anything like this. You honestly expressed things that I think people need to hear, even if they're struggling, if they're not struggling and they need understanding. Either way, I think what you had to say was great, and I appreciate having you on the show. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Fight number three in the ring right now. Fred Mandrakia of Chelsea Mass taking on Robin Rhode Island Cedo Hawk. We've seen Cedo Hawk before here on AFL and SportsTV.com productions before. This is the first time we'll see Fred Mandrakia. Mark, I know you've seen him before.
That's what I saw Fred win at Cage Titans this past summer. Definitely looks to be a decent fighter. We'll have to see how it translates here in the AFL.
Mandrakia wearing the black and camouflage trunks. Cedo Hawk wearing the baby blue trunks. I think they're actually basketball shorts. His boxes popping out.
I would vote for the basketball shorts.
Cedo Hawk considers himself a boxer first, but smart enough to become a complete fighter. No gym affiliation for Cedo Hawk. He's listed as an independent fighter. Mandrakia didn't list anything either, but Cedo Hawk simply says no, he's independent.
Which always worries me. I'll never bet on an independent fighter to win. In fact, I mean, I really think you want to take MMA serious. You got to get with the gym. You got to get with a coach that knows you. You want to get with a corner that knows you so they can coach you, so you can get teammates, you can practice. It's very important to get with the gym.
What do you sound like right now? You sound like Dana White talking to Roy Nelson. He's probably the most accomplished independent fighter in mixed martial arts.
Did you know Roy Nelson's gym is in his living room? It really is. He has mats and all that stuff. He brings trainers in to train him.
Maybe Cedo Hawk has the same situation.
Perhaps. See how it works here.
Well, this fight has remained on its feet thus far. Cedo Hawk considers himself a boxer. That should be to his advantage.
I mean, he looks to have pretty quick hands right now. He hasn't been able to connect yet, but... No, they're both moving around the ring pretty well. Or the cage, sorry.
While seeking his first MMA victory tonight, he's 0-2. Mandrakia coming into this fight with a record of 2-5. And a nice right hand by Cito Hoffman's got Mandrakia in trouble.
I'd like to see Cito fall up there. He looked like he had him hurt a little bit. Keep the pressure on him. Don't let him recover. I don't know what you just say, you know, Fred, you're 2-5, Cito off 0-2. But you gotta remember, these amateur fights, they don't crown your pro record. This is the time to work out the kinks, to try to, you know, become a complete fighter before you do turn pro, before you start making more money, or before you start trying to do this for a living.
I really like the way Cito Hoff countered Fred Mandrake.
Very, very quick fighter.
Mandrake now going in for the guillotine on Cito Hoff. Does he have it tight? He looks to have it. Looks to have tight.
Standing guillotine is tough to get, but if he needs to, you'll see him lift Cito up a little bit more. Restrict that blood flow. Cito's
trying to pull his way out of it. And he is with a first round submission over Cito Hoff, who was choked unconscious on the mat. Up until that point, Cito Hoff is having himself a good round. He is up. He is upset. I think he's realizing what is happening. He's smiling now.
I'm pretty sure he thought the doctor was the fighter there. He was out cold. He kind of woke up. Maybe thought he was still in the fight. You know what Cito said, a boxer first. That might be evident, but he needs to, get the ground game, get the rest of his game in check to be a complete MMA fighter.
Well, a good performance by Fred Mandrake here at AFO Halloween Havoc. Nice district sportsmanship after a fight by Cito Hoff. After it looked like he was going to attack, the doctor smiled, joked, and apologized. Like you said, he was out of cold. Got broken up there. He was still in the fight, and the doctor was supposed to.
Yeah, it happens sometimes to doctors, to refs. You're never safe when you're in the cage, Peter. You're a doctor, a ref, hell, a corner man. You never know what could happen in there.
You and I are as close to the cage as one could possibly be while still being in that safe zone.
I'm not stepping in there.
We'll get the official verdict from our ring announcer, John Vita, on Fred Mandrakia with a first round submission over Cito Hoff. Let's get the official time.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have the time of 2 minutes, 21 seconds of the first round. Your winner by a chokeout from the guillotine, your track, Fred Mandrakia.
Cito Hoff never once tapping. He went limp. He went cold. Fred Mandrakia chokes him out cold in the opening round.